In the early spring of 2004, I ended a 5-year stint at a job I never could have imagined, in a part of the world that was never part of the plan. The unexpected detour started with a phone call on a cold winter afternoon. At that moment, I was half in, half out of the workplace, downshifting, as it's called these days. My wife Linda, our 2 young kids, and I were living a comfortable life in a pleasant New York suburb. A few days a week, I worked on articles and a book. On other days, I hopped the Metro North Line to Manhattan, where I had a consulting arrangement at Time Inc. My job there was to think up blue sky projects for Time magazine. I spent my hours brainstorming ideas for special issues and new projects, such as a news weekly for grade school kids. But during those morning and evening commutes, I secretly agonized over whether I had enough money socked away to be so casually employed. I was worried about the number. The man on the phone was the vice chairman of Land's End, at the time a public company with revenues approaching $2 billion. Land's End meant very little to me. Like many occasional customers, I viewed it as interchangeable with its arch rival, L.L. Bean. Both sold sturdy, preppy clothing, canvas tote bags, and goose down everything else. But I did know that Land's End was admired for its folksy phone operators, who dispensed friendly service from a little town in the Midwest. The vice chairman told me that Land's End had recently appointed a new CEO. His mandate was to bring new energy to the company. The Land's End catalogs, he said, needed more surprise and sizzle. The company wanted to revitalize the brand. He said the company was looking for a publishing type who could generate covers and features you'd be more likely to find in national magazines than in clothing catalogs. Land's End wanted some fresh juice in its national advertising, someone to help advance its fledgling online business. All of this would fall into my area, the vice chairman said, trying his best to set my chinos on fire. He wondered whether I'd have even a remote interest in flying to Madison, Wisconsin, then trekking out to company headquarters in Dodgeville, a tiny hamlet some 40 miles west of the capital. Was he smoking prairie weed? The idea of me in the pajama game was surreal. The closest I'd ever come to the garment trade was back when I edited Esquire magazine. I was obliged to take regular trips to Paris and Milan, where I schmoozed menswear designers from Armani to Zegna. Esquire depended on the men's clothing industry for much of its advertising. Fashion pages were its commercial lifeblood. Nonetheless, I regarded these trips as delightful boondoggles, days of wine and risotto. Once back in the office, and until I longed again for a steamy bowl of brodetto, the menswear pages dropped to the bottom of my priority list. I didn't know a placket from a mitered yoke. As for Wisconsin, had you shown me a map, put a pistol to my head, and asked me to identify the state, I would have straightaway pointed to Minnesota.